Welcome to the Hype Leadership Podcast. David and Lindsay Curry are dynamic entrepreneurs focused in high-performance leadership and coaching in sales and service. Through the Hype Leadership Podcast, David and Lindsay strive to serve in your journey towards a high-performance life. And now, here are your hosts, David and Lindsay Curry.
Welcome to Hype Leadership Podcast. I'm Lindsay Curry, and alongside me is my co-host, David Curry, and we are thrilled that you are with us today. To set the tone, I wanted to share a quote that really resonates with us. Quality questions create a quality life. Successful people ask better questions, and as a result, they get better answers. And that is from the infamous Tony Robbins. But today, we have a special guest with us, Robin Kelly. Robin is an agency leader with Orca Life and someone with the rare ability to move people to make impactful decisions driven by his conviction. Robin joined Orca Life in April of 2020, and in this time, he has become an exceptional leader in our industry. Robin has personally produced over 850,000, and his team, Kelly Financial, has produced over 4.7 million in production. Whoop, whoop. Robin, welcome.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful to have you on, man. As we continue to grow, you continue to rise as one of the largest agencies that we have grown here at Orca Life. So we are excited to get to pick your brain, pick you apart, have a little fun today on the call. I'm excited to be back after a week of missing this recording. So I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Absolutely. And what, you know, Robin, what a crazy time to make a move in 2020, right? Especially in April. That was in the heart of the pandemic. And I'm sure that has a lot of what kind of brought you to Orca Life.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, so that is that true? April 2020. Because I remember March. I always say, because we signed a contract to build our home in February of 2020. And then March, so this all sticks out to me very vividly. Then March, us as commission-based sales folks, door knockers, we visit you in your home, we show up unannounced, all those good things, kind of got taken off the road and income changed quite a bit. So April of 2020, but you were in the car business, right?
Yep. I started in 2012 and then switched here in 2020.
I will say you definitely don't look that old, man.
the kiddo starts making me feel that way a little more. Kate's a great, but yeah.
Give yourself a few more years. It'll turn from the shade. So 2012. So how old were you then?
So I started there when I was 21.
Heck, I'm 21 years old. Cool.
That's a long time in the car business. I mean, truly.
Yeah. Felt a lot longer than it really was.
I'm sure. So let me ask you this. How has this business been different than the car business for you?
Man, so there's it's kind of funny because there's a lot of differences, but there also were a lot of similarities as far as the actual kind of mold of the business. As far as, you know, the contact with the client, but, you know, on the outside of it, it's very different. You know, the biggest change to me or the biggest difference really was just the culture, you know, enjoying going to work and not just with me, but basically with everybody that I was surrounded with, you know, every person or at least at the spot I was, I don't think anybody ever loved going to work or really look forward to anything, and heck, sometimes maybe not even look forward to selling a car or a product. So that was the biggest change for me, honestly, was just culture of people actually enjoying what they do and having a work-life balance. Obviously in car sales or management and other sales jobs, a lot of places you have to be working when the client's available, and obviously this is completely different. it's on your own time. So I would say those couple things. And then another big one would just be the stress level. Obviously doing this, there's some stresses and things like that too, but it pales in comparison to, you know, what you deal with at a car lot, basically just kind of waiting around on people all day. So I would say those three things, probably the biggest differences, the culture and the stress being the lack of stress here being the two biggest.
You know, that's impactful that you say that, you know, in the car business, you know, sometimes you might not even enjoy selling the car. And we have come to know you really well over the last 4 years that you've been here. And we know personally that you have a passion for sales. So to think about that, especially speaking to folks that are in sales right now, and you're like, man, I wasn't even enjoying some of those moments where I actually got the deal, right?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. A lot of it's the waiting game. You know, being in finance, it never failed. Somebody comes in 20 minutes before you close. And in that business, there's no coming back tomorrow. You know, it's similar to this too. Usually you have to get it that day, but working a schedule like 9 to 9 and then having to stay until 10:30 or 11, you know, it's I was ready to get them out of my office, not necessarily focused on actually making money off of the deal. So if you need any tips to buying a car, it's not a bad idea to walk in right before it closed. You might not have some happy people, but you'll probably get a pretty good deal.
I laugh because as you say that, Lindley, if you remember when we bought that Honda Pilot years ago, you remember us being the only ones in that place by the end of the night?
I
remember them like having to walk us back, turn hall lights on to get us back to the finance guys. So it's funny you say it. Brings back memories. But, you know, I've never really heard somebody talk about the job that we have being less stressful.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the way that you put that because it makes total sense, right? Like, I've always talked about the difference in the sales aspect, and we've talked a lot about that. Like in the car business, they're showing up to your court. Like, hey, this is my home court, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I've always looked at it from that angle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's to me, and I spent 6 months in the car business, and that was enough for me to know.
Yeah.
Quickly got back to golf, and then I had to finally make money in the industry. But I always looked at that as like a comfortability, like, hey, you're on my court, baby. Let's dance. Where, you know, we're showing up and we're playing ball on their court.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never looked at it from the light of I don't have control who shows up at my house. But when I'm coming to yours, I got all the control. I can go knock on yours and I'll knock on the one next to you and I'll knock on the one across the street. Until I figure out something. So I love that spin because I've just never heard it put that way, man. So I really like you shedding some light on that. Now, when you go back, so I love the theme and the quote that we have going on this week because we have always, as we've gotten into sales, we've learned the power of the question, right? Like the greater question. And, there's just so much that can be uncovered. We talk about in our sales process, open-ended questions, builds the relationship. So when you're sitting in the office, like 2020, COVID's hitting, what kind of questions, how did you finally get over the hump of being here? That's usually what happens.
Sure. So I was very lucky in my transition coming here. Simply because of the friendships that I had that were already here. You know, two of your previous guests, obviously Corey and Chris, they're my best friends still to this day. And, you know, it was a situation where I had such belief in them. I knew that they weren't going to steer me in the wrong direction. So it was something that was an easy transition for me. You know, so the questions that I was asking, to be quite honest, was mostly about money, right? I didn't realize that was going to come with less stress, and I knew the schedule probably basically had to be better. So, you know, the questions that I was asking was pretty detailed. you know, as a joke, I told Chris if he showed me a W-2 with a 100K on it, I would show up. And,
that's what I did with Kevin. He only needed 20,000.
Yeah, and if I remember right, it was like August or September. Like, it wasn't even near towards the end of the year. So at that point, I was pretty well in. And, you know, it was something where I knew I was coming for probably a year before I actually did. It was just kind of about phasing out from where I was. And, yeah, that kind of got out in the open. And I think that was probably one of the reasons they helped me get pushed over the hump to do it. But yeah, so I was lucky in my transition in just because of the trust that I had in the guys. And, you know, it didn't take being here very long to figure out that you know, all those answers were, you know, legitimate. And yeah, so for me, it was a little bit different coming. I just wanted to make sure that my income was going to stay the same. I'd worked hard to get to where I was, but that was really the only, you know, decent part of what I was doing.
Yeah, so many people. I mean, that's typical.
Right. Well, and you really just needed proof. You just needed to see something on the paper, right, from Chris. You're like, hey, man, just show me the paper, right?
If you can do it, I can do it type of thing.
Absolutely. So what skills were you taught prior that you felt helped you be successful right out of the gate? Because you've been extremely successful. I mean, clearly your numbers speak to that. And you were... Weren't you number one agent first year?
My first full year, yeah. And, you know, that's another spot that I was pretty lucky in, because, again, going back to what I said earlier, there are a lot of differences, but there's also a lot of similarities. You know, when someone comes up at a dealership, the first thing that, you know, when you ask them if they need help, they say they're just looking. That's just like us showing up at a door and them telling us that they've got it taken care of. As far as my part in F&I, you know, I'm doing applications, I'm getting them approved. I'm sitting in front of generally a husband and a wife trying to talk them into adding a bill to protect their purchase at that point. So just a lot of similarities. And the biggest one, and the ones that I try to really pour into my guys and get them to understand as early as possible, is really just being able to be told no and to be okay with that and to keep moving throughout the process or going to the next house. So that was probably the big ones for me. It to me, it was an easy transition. And I tried to compare, you know, what I did and what was successful there and add to that, or find similarities between that and my new job at that time. And so, yeah, I got to say it was an easy transition for me as far as skill set. But also when I was able to transition with the skill set and then get the other benefits of, you know, having a team, having people that love going to work, having the support that you need, that's really where the credit goes. The combination of having a little bit of experience, but also starting to do something that I love. You know, I looked at it in a way, I look at it a little different now, but at that time it was basically a waste of 8 years for me. But as I've been here longer, I've learned that there were some lessons there, and it did make it for an easy transition. But being told no and just understanding that sales is truly a numbers game. You know, I tell my guys all the time, if you do this business, you're going to get told no thousands and thousands of times over your career, but really you just need 7 or 10 yeses a week to make it work. So, it was an easy transition for me. I would credit it a little bit from the skill set, but also the support boosted that skill set up as well.
I love that, because the no, and I really, I guess, you know, when I was out in the field, I had an agent that came to me and said, man, just the rejection. And I was kind of like, well, what are you talking? And it's the no's, right? It's the rejection. Human nature, we want to hear the yes us and be relatable. And so that was kind of like, oh, I heard no. I did hear no. But I guess, you know, you just kind of let that roll off your back and you're moving to the next person, right? No means next.
Yep.
So, I love that.
No means next. I was never taught that in the garden. I love that you shed some light on that, because we did our company conference call this past week on basically the same theory, right? The power of the mindset. And 8 years in the car business, I'm sure that you learned, you know, that mental ability, like you're going to get shut down, and you've got to stand back up and show back up to the next one. So
for sure.
That took me a while to learn in our business. And I guess that makes sense. You know, there is probably nothing more important. I've heard it said before that, you know, 1099, your sales people in general, the sales industry, they are all so highly paid because of the brutal beating that they take to go out there and earn their living. And that is why most people don't make it in the business, because as we've always said around here, it's easier to go just punch in, know I've got a paycheck coming on Friday, rather than go out broke on Monday and have to go earn that through a lot of mental struggle, usually. So now that you've been here, you've been highly successful, you know, as you talk, you've got 8 years, you've got twice the amount of experience in the car business as you do here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I want to know, as you've progressed, like as your sales process has now changed, you're on their court. Our sale is an emotional sale. You know, you have to build that emotion, or usually our needle doesn't move. The car business is a little more transactional. What's some of the things that you've learned being here that you've applied, that you've grown, or that you're teaching?
Sure. Yeah, it's actually there is a lot, because been me and a couple of the guys that I've brought from the dealership that did the same thing as me have talked about it. And honestly, if after doing this, if I were to go back to the job that I used to have, I would be a lot better at it. And really, there's a couple of reasons. The biggest one is just the conviction of, you know, really believing in the product. I've had the benefit when I was 17 of seeing what life insurance did for me, as far as helping myself and my family at that point in time. So really understanding that if you go out and you do something that you enjoy, the sell becomes a lot easier. So it was really, I would say that's the biggest thing, along with true sales commission like we are. It was a little different structure. So there would be situations where, like I mentioned earlier, if I sold it, I sold it. If not, that's okay. I'm still basically making the same money compared to here. If you don't, you know, you're not going to. So I feel like that was a big thing with it as well. But I would honestly just say for lack of better words, the swag that you walk up to, or whatever you want to call it, of being able to go in and really help somebody and having seen the benefit before myself, it made it a lot easier for me to, for clients to naturally feel that, I guess, because truthfully, I'm a lot better at selling insurance than I was at warranties and other things like that. So I really think just believing in the product, you know, if I was selling a warranty, yeah, maybe somebody's car breaks down, maybe it doesn't, maybe they want it, maybe they don't. But it's here, I have the drive to know that, like, hey, even if this person's telling me no, I'm going to work a little bit harder for their beneficiary, for my family, to get it across the finish line. So really just enjoying what you do will go a long way, whether that's sales or anything else. So that's probably the biggest thing that I did develop. And, you know, and the court being different was a little bit of a transition, like you said, showing up to their house. But once you understand that you can hold folks accountable without making them mad and them kicking you out of their house, You know, it becomes pretty easy when you don't have a boundary. I mean, obviously there's a boundary not to cross, but you know what I mean? Being blunt with them and explaining how it works and why they need what you have. And it's pretty simple when what you have is something that everybody is going to benefit from at some point, it starts to become, you know, pretty easy.
Yeah, 100%. Like you said, experiencing that, right, is one of those missing pieces for some, right? And you know, God's good fortune, maybe you haven't experienced the loss of a loved one and you understand what happens when they pass and the process of a funeral preparation and the questions and the process. And you know, as we say, the 111 questions funeral director has for somebody, not only the questions, but now they're asking you at the end of that interview, how are we going to pay for this today? To experience what that's like. And for us, again, for the product that we have to be the solution that allows for that family that may not have your average funeral of $10,000 to $12,000 sitting in the bank account, literally being okay, putting that in the ground. Conviction, it makes a lot of sense to me, right? You've experienced it personally, and you've also probably experienced trying to sell a car that you yourself may have these second thoughts on whether or not this is a good purchase, smart purchase.
For sure.
Right. So, I totally see the conviction behind, you know, like we've always said, Ziegler, right? When Zig's out selling pots and pans, he's buying pots and pans for the house that he can't afford, because he's got to believe in the product that he has. So with that, I want to just kind of dive into you know, because this industry, it is a very different industry. And, you know, us coming from outside of this industry of insurance, let alone death care, we didn't know anything about it. You know, you've been in a business where, I mean, even with this past year's whatever port issues, you know, you're hearing all these rumor mills of, well, now they're not going to be able to get vehicles again. You know, we remember the chip experience. And so we know how sensitive that business can be. You, as a father now, 14-month-old son, you know, I, with three of those little things, understand how life changes and, you know, kind of our conviction towards our future changes a hair. Talk to me about the security that you get being in this business, and like, where do you see that for your future as a young man, as a young father?
Yeah.
Speak to that for me.
Yeah. So the way I look at it, to me, there's, you know, there's two things that are very important that you have to basically, you know, live a life in the world that we have. And one is family and one is income. And if my previous job taught me anything, is that the family part is a whole lot more important than the income part. Now, I've changed, and obviously I was single without kids and things like that. So at that time, it was just about the money. But it's now it's switched that I really can't imagine what my life would look like having Cameron now and not, you know, just not being around. And it's kind of crazy because even with that job, I was home every night, but there's no way in the world I would see him near as much as I do now. So the security for me is knowing that basically no matter what, I'm going to be able to take care of my family, not only by being there, but by also financially supporting them. And then the other side of that is just the security of the job. You know, I use it in homes a lot, but there's literally no one that's ever sitting at a funeral home saying, well, I wish Dad didn't have that $15,000 policy, or I wish Mom didn't have this. So just knowing that it benefits everyone, you know, at some point, it gives me security to know that this is going to be a business that if I can get in front of people, I'm going to be able to sell policies for a long time. So there's security on multiple fronts. One, knowing that I have a job that I'll be able to be there for my family. and the other and produce income, along with always being able to have new clients. You know, going back to comparing the car business, you're constantly waiting on someone. You're waiting here. You have your leads, you're just on to the next one, and as long as you have that, you know, it's pretty secure.
Wow. Let me ask you, because I love that, because family, I love that you said, you know, yes, I was young and money. And of course, when we're all, you know, 20s, and now I know folks aren't having kids till older now, you know, but, you know, establishing an income. But like you said, like, look, family is everything, right? And that's something, you know, near and dear to my heart. And, you know, I love my kids. And so, but if I can't spend any present time, right, present time with them, then what does it matter, right? So I love your perspective on that, because that's so important. And it can get lost in today's world, right? Because
very
we're all busy and working and trying to provide for our family. So I love that. So let me ask you this. You know, you have a thriving agency 4 years into this business. So what, you know, bringing people, what has worked for you when you have brought people into this business? What are some of the things that you're sharing with them about what this business can do for them and their future?
Yeah. So I've been lucky enough to have a lot of warm market contacts for the most part. You know, listening to Chris's podcast with you guys, it's basically the same situation. It's people that I was working with or friends with, looking back on it, you know, sports and being in school and things like that really created a lot of contacts over time that I was able to narrow down and reach out to, you know, and it was something, I believe Chris mentioned this on his, once I got here and saw the change in culture and the income possibilities and just the less stress, all the things that were what I was basically looking for, it was really easy to take that same conviction and go to these people who I knew would be high producers and basically tell them, like, come on, let's go. It's a weird situation, but I've thought about it before, but out of my 11 the directs that I have, not one of them ever came and rode with me before they agreed to come on. So it's, wow. You know, I was lucky to have a lot of true friends, you know, people that I had either worked with for 10 years or known for a really long time that, you know, I guess kind of put their trust in me. And, you know, the biggest thing, and Corey did a great job in translating this into LFG, but it really is the pay it forward mentality of, you know, when I hire someone, I tell them, look, if you put in the effort, I'm going to make sure you make it, whether that's jumping in with you when you have to make money, pulling you to back end, maybe helping you financially, whatever the case may be. That's basically my promise to them, as long as they hold up their promises of working hard, being able to learn, and just trying to get better. You know, one thing that Orca provides, and sometimes I think we could, not on purpose, but take for granted, is just all the different resources that we have. It doesn't matter if you're the number one agent or at the very bottom, you're able to constantly be learning. So as far as my promises, it's just I've passed it along as like, hey, you know, come ride with me, see what you think. It ended up where they usually didn't come ride. They just ended up going with it. So it's something that I've been lucky to surround myself with a lot of great people and a lot of great friends over time that truly I feel like have made it easier for me to hire from a warm market. But it's kind of just bringing them under your wing. Like, hey, man, if you come and you do this, I promise you, you're going to make it. Look at these numbers. This is real. I'm not BSing you. This is how it works. And if you come on and you give me these commitments, I'll make sure that you make it. And it's worked out for me. I haven't missed yet. So,
well, you know what I've noticed, Robin, just through this conversation, you've been able to be relatable, right? Whether that's in the home, with your family, hiring a brand new individual, you've been able to be relatable. And because you can relate to their their experience of them sitting at the car lot and missing out on their children's lives, then you're able to pull in that conviction, right? And you're able to share in your experience of what your prior was in your former and now, what you're able to do now.
Yeah, it's a big thing, especially coming from a place that honestly everybody just sits around and talks all day about what they could do different to make the same amount of money. it's not finding a needle in a haystack, that's for sure. It's more about just the relationship that you build over time, and there's people that I've had that have taken 3 or 4 years, and you know, I was the same way, not 3 or 4, but it's the guaranteed paycheck is something that, you know, going from that to full commission can be difficult, but I really don't even look at it as full commission because, you know, I know we don't technically clock in, but if you knock at 10 a.m. on Monday until, you know, past dark, and you do that for 3 days and you clock in, it's not really full commission because you're going to get a check. So, you know, that's just how I see it.
Yeah, I love that. You know, that speaks to just getting back to that, you know, the security of our industry, right? I don't know about taxes, but we do know death at this point. As we say, you know, there's only been one walk-off that scathed that. So in our world, that unfortunately costs a lot of money when you pass away. So that is the primary thing that we are our solution for folks is making sure they have that instant savings account ready for that day.
Sure.
And we haven't figured out how to get around that. So that's a beautiful thing as an industry. No matter what happens with electric vehicles or the port system, or if the government starts giving us free cars like that, you know, the whole deal. But I love what you say about these folks that you brought in the business. And you know what I think about is what we've always taught. Nobody is ever going to buy anything from somebody that they do not trust. And you bought this business from someone you trust. A lot of people that Lindsay and I have brought in this business over the years have bought it because they know and trust us. The people that you have brought in this business have bought the business because they trust you. And every day we are out selling policies and putting bank accounts and helping beneficiaries we never meet because people begin to trust us, and our process builds that trust over a very short period of time of showing up as someone you did not know, now leaving as one of the more important people in your family, right? Yeah.
Sounds crazy, but it
does sound crazy. And I just want to tie us back in to what we themed this call about, the podcast, Quality Questions, Create a Quality Life. It is the better question that begins to build that trust, begin to build that relationship. We're doing that in a very short period of time here, and it's all in the greater question. So,
absolutely. Robin, thank you so much for being on our podcast today. And how can, someone is listening or maybe they're watching the episode, how can they reach out to you? What's the best way to contact you, your email or your phone number? Can you share that?
Yeah, for sure. So my email is Robin Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y, at orca.life. And my cell phone number is 606-425-0822. And text is probably the easiest way to start, but you could call me as well and feel free to reach out.
Awesome.
Yeah, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for shining light on our business, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you to all our listeners, and we will see you next week.
David and Lindsay Curry are focused on high-performance coaching and sales and service. Reach out today at 502-314-2789 or visit hype.financial. That's HIPE.financial to learn more. Thanks for listening to the Hype Leadership Podcast.
I'm speaking with Lindsey Streeter, Senior Vice President of Global Military Affairs at Bank of America. Lindsey, thanks so much for taking some time for me. Really do appreciate it, sir.
Hello, Matt. Happy to be here.
Well, I am very happy to have you as well. We are airing this, of course, just right after Veterans Day, and it's an important thing to discuss about the value that veterans bring to our workplaces in, you know, civilian life each and every day. Actually, the Department of Labor says, I think about 180,000 service members transition to civilian life each year. Talk, if you will, about that just sheer number of people and the skills that they bring to the workplace.
Yeah, Matt, 180K, large number, and we're finding that about 18 to 20% of them begin their own businesses. So large number of entrepreneurs there, and they need help as well in understanding how to gain access to capital and how to network in that business space. The skill set. Veterans as a whole bring a myriad of skills, both soft and hard. But in any veteran, what you'll find there are about 10 or 12 skills that I inherited with just being a veteran. You're going to get a leader. You're going to get a person that's a leader. More importantly, a person that understands the importance of followership. You're going to get a guy that's steeped in teamwork. You're going to get a young lady that's able to communicate. You're going to get a service member that's able to problem solve no matter what the situation is. They're going to bring strong work ethic, integrity, adaptability, and a myriad of managerial skills to the table. So you're getting a valuable person, a valuable teammate to bring into your organization if you hire a veteran.
Yeah, it definitely sounds that way from my personal experience as well. All of those qualities, the veterans that I have known, they all possess. My dad was a Vietnam veteran, and he possessed all of those qualities throughout his life as well. But, you know, taking those skills that you learn during military service and then transferring that to the maybe a corporate workplace or just civilian life in general, what are maybe some challenges that veterans face in making that transition?
Yeah, Matt, you just named it. The biggest challenge is actually transferring those skills, understanding how those skills apply in the civilian workforce. Huge opportunity. Military members, their military occupational specialties or jobs are written in jargon, military jargon. They're written in a unique language. And so when it comes time to transition, a lot of times the veteran doesn't understand how to make the translation or how to really see and represent themselves in this newly translated manner. They don't have the confidence to really represent themselves in this manner because they're just seeing it for the first time. And so what we've done at Bank of America is we hired a veteran-centric recruiter, a veteran himself that was a recruiter while in the military. And his job is to help those transitioning veterans to unpack those skill sets. He meets with hiring managers, and he ensures that there's a right fit coming in the front door. And I believe that's really crucial. It allows the veteran to quickly assimilate by applying skills that they already feel comfortable in doing, and they feel like they're a valued member of the team because they're able to provide input and effectiveness day one walking in the door. So it seems to work for us.
That's wonderful. And also, you know, talk about your own transition into Bank of America from the military. They're like, what was your personal experience and in, you know, the things that you learned maybe going through that process and how you're able to apply the skills, all of those different skills that you mentioned earlier and more, I'm sure, how that's translated to your success now. I mean, you're now Senior Vice President of Global Military Affairs there at B of A. So obviously it's been a successful transition for you.
Yeah, it was a challenge, more a mental challenge than any other. You know, I enlisted in the Army at 17 years old. I was scared, a young kid out of Washington, D.C. 31 years later, I was horrified. I was horrified in the notion that I was leaving everything that I knew and understood and had mastered and going to move on into a civilian job somewhere. And so, and a recommendation to Bank of America, I interviewed the bank before the bank had the opportunity to interview me. And I did that by understanding what its mission and vision statements were, looking at its core values, and that really hooked me there. I knew that I came to the table, Matt, with seven Army values that were put into me. They had become a part of the very fabric and fiber who I was, and I knew I couldn't shake those values. And so I overlaid those values with Bank of America's core values, and I found that they were a perfect match. Upon understanding that they were a match, I was then armed with the confidence in knowing that no matter where I landed or what I was going to be asked to do by my leadership here at Bank of America, I was going to be okay. So that was my experience with transitioning.
Well, that's wonderful. And as I say, obviously been a very successful one for you. Just about time, Lindsay, for us to wrap things up here, though. But anything else that you wanted to mention that comes to mind? Any veterans who might be listening, some words of encouragement as they transition into the workplace?
Yeah, I would like them to understand that they can contact the U.S. Chamber of Commerce if they're looking for opportunities. If they want to come to Bank of America, our opportunities are listed at careers.bankofamerica.com. I would also let them know that they can be confident in knowing that America cares about the value and the sacrifice of their veterans, and they want to welcome them with open arms and provide opportunities for them to continue their employment so they can take care of their families.
Very good. Lindsay Streeter is Senior Vice President of Global Military Affairs at Bank of America. I also neglected to mention he was the Military Times 2023 Veteran of the Year. So congratulations on that, I guess, belatedly here on my part. But Lindsay, thank you so much. I really do appreciate your time, sir.
Cool, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.